Well, good afternoon and welcome to The Exchange. It is a privilege to be here with you this afternoon. Clearly, I am not Ed Stetzer. I don't have the long goatee, the Duck Dynasty thing going on. Ed is actually on the road. He's in Australia today, and we're thankful for his influence on the other side of the world. Thank you for joining us, though. My name is Micah Fries. I'm the Vice President of Lifeway Research, where I work here with Ed, and we're excited to spend some time today thinking specifically about the idea of how we engage the world. You know, as I think about Scripture, I think about Philippians in particular, chapter 2, starting in verse 12, it says this: "So then, dear friends, just as you've always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now even more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who is working in you, enabling you both to desire and to work out his good purpose. Do everything without grumbling and arguing, so that you may be blameless and pure, children of God who are faultless in a crooked and perverted generation, among whom you shine like stars in the world." I specifically am interested in that last statement, that God has called us as followers of Jesus to stand out, to uniquely position ourselves in the communities that we find ourselves in the domains and the circles of influence we find ourselves in, to shine as examples of Christ, as examples of the gospel to those who are around us. And I think this is challenging. I think it's difficult, particularly for those of you who are church leaders who are watching this. God's put you in positions of influence and of prominence. You stand out. You stand out and you're unique in your communities. People look up to you, they're challenged by you. But I think the unique posture that you find yourselves in is having to live as a reflection of Christ while everybody's watching. You know, the old illustration about pastors and church leaders living in glass houses is certainly can be true. You go to the grocery store and you're wondering if everybody's watching you while you pick out your groceries. We want to talk today a little bit about this idea of what it looks like to live out a faithful picture of the gospel, a faithful declaration of Jesus, when everybody's watching. And I think our guests today are going to be able to help encourage us, enlighten us, and hopefully challenge you along the way. So we're going to go to a break here in just a second, and then we're going to come back and introduce our guest and then go ahead and dig deeper a little bit into this topic of what it means to shine like stars in the world. Go and check out this break. We'll be right back in just a second. Welcome back. It's a privilege to have you again with us today. You know, we have a number of guests. Last week we had Dahati Lewis, pastor of Blueprint Church down in Atlanta, with us. And we have leaders in the church world, men like Andy Stanley and Tim Keller, Rick Warren, those sort of folks. And so typically I think that's the guest you would expect when you watch The Exchange. Today we've got someone, actually a couple, who are a little bit different. They're definitely leaders in the world, definitely leaders in the Christian world, but they don't really come from church leadership so much as they come from the world of athletics and the arts. And so we're really excited to have with us Ben and Juliana Zobrist. They've got a brand new book coming out April 1st of this year called Double Play. We're excited to have them. Thank you guys for joining us. We really appreciate you being here with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe just a little bit of an introduction for who you are so that those who are watching will know. I would imagine many of them will know already. Ben plays for the Tampa Bay Rays. We're thankful to be able to watch their brilliance. I'm a Royals fan, so I get a little frustrated about it every once in a while. But you guys continue to succeed. Raised in Eureka, Illinois, pastor's kid, went to Olivet Nazarene, and then graduated from Dallas Baptist University, drafted by the Houston Astros, and traded to Tampa Bay. One of the things that I find particularly unique, I mean, you've been to a couple of All-Star games, including this last season's All-Star game, right? And then played in the World Series. Those are incredible opportunities. I'm a sabermetrics nut. We talked about this a little bit before the show. For those of you who are watching who don't know what that is, that's kind of a statistical analysis of baseball. One of the statistics that's pretty impressive is this WAR statistic, wins against replacement, basically trying to measure your weight, if you will, towards the team's ability to win. And you're third in all of baseball, which is a pretty impressive feat. And so, anyway, clearly a big yes. We're glad to have you with us here. And then Juliana, also raised as a pastor's child in Iowa City, Iowa. Are you a Hawkeye fan? Did you grow up a Hawkeye fan?
No.
No.
Oh, am I breaking hearts by saying that?
Probably. But anyway, we're glad to have you with us. And Juliana, you're while Ben excels on the diamond, you are an artist, you're a musician. Two albums out, a third album on the way, I hear. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's coming soon. I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. Sung the national anthem before a number of different games, including game 3 of the ALDS, right?
Yeah,
that's
pretty
cool.
Awesome.
That's got to be a pretty cool moment for the two of you.
That was awesome.
As a couple. Two children, is that correct? Mm-hmm. A daughter and a son. Excited about that. All right, well, we'll stop with the platitudes and the introduction. We just want folks to know who you are. We're glad that you're here with us. Why don't you just sort of kick things off by telling us a little bit about who you are, your background, maybe Ben and then Juliana, just kind of where you came from, how you met, and how you ended up here on the stage with us at the Exchange.
Yeah, well, like you said, we grew up in pastors' homes. We heard the gospel from the time we were little kids, both of us, and you know, accepted the Lord into my life at a very young age. And grew up in the church and in the doors of the church every time church was open, and was involved in the youth group and you know, drama team, puppet team. I mean, I even preached.
I really
want
to see you with a puppet,
yeah,
man. I just got to be honest. I kind of like to see that.
We even had that. You know, we had many different ministries, and you know, I was involved in just about all of them from a youth perspective. So, was really heavily involved in athletics, you know, and sports. I loved every sport. Mm-hmm. I wasn't just a baseball player. You know, I loved basketball, football. I ran cross country. I ran road races. When I was a senior in high school, was when I was getting ready to figure out where the Lord was taking me with my life. And, you know, it was at that time that he really showed me that I had put sports on this, like, elevated level in my life, so much so that it was a big-time idol for me. And success has always been a struggle for me, dealing with that and failure at the same time. So it was at that time that the Lord really showed me that he really wanted to be in control of everything. I had to put him in that place, and he had to have number one place for me to have any effect and really to have peace in my life, mm-hmm. In my life with him. So from there, he really kind of jump-started my relationship and my idea of what I wanted to do with my life. I decided I wanted to go to Bible school. Mm-hmm. I had no scholarship offers out of high school to play sports, so I was just planning on doing ministry. I was going to go to Bible school and study the Bible and see where the Lord took me from there. And about a month after high school, after I graduated high school, I went to a scout day that my high school coach invited me to go to. And at this scout day is when I was invited to go to Olivet Nazarene University. There was a Christian coach there named Elliot Johnson, who's an awesome man of God. And he offered me a full ride scholarship to go play baseball there. And I you know, since I had given my life to the Lord, I had just asked the Lord, if this is what you want me to do, you know, I'll follow it. You know, I'll go there and I'll do it for your purposes. And so that's where he led me at the time. And from there, it's kind of been a gradual progression. I got drafted. I played in, you know, the minor leagues for a little while and eventually made it to the major leagues. So along that way was when You know, actually in college is when I first heard of Juliana. And, you know, just that idea of looking for someone to share your life with and to partner in ministry with and you know, to raise a family with. I was always looking for a godly woman from a young age. That was something my parents always plugged into me. And so little did I know at the time that the Lord had prepared, you know, a woman like this for me. So why don't you go ahead and share share some of your upbringing.
Yeah, I was also as well raised in a Christian home. My dad is awesome pastor in Iowa City. Mm-hmm. And I just from day one was so focused on my music. I was classically trained in voice and in piano. Mm-hmm. And very driven, very, I guess that's why I was not a Hawkeye fan. Right.
Just didn't have time for that.
Not aware of sports going on other than my brothers playing baseball, mm-hmm. which at the end of the day, I'm very grateful that they did because it's the only sport that I understand. So thankful for that. But so I decided when I was a junior that I was going to go to Belmont University in Nashville here. And I didn't apply anywhere else. I just knew that that's where the Lord wanted me to be and went and auditioned and got accepted and studied music there for 4 years. I ended up working with the rock artist Plum, mm-hmm. Tiffany Lee. Mm-hmm. And working with her was awesome. I mean, besides being a wonderful person, she was definitely a mentor to me musically, the way that she did a lot, you know, just her business was sure. inspiring to me. So I worked for her for a few years. And that's kind of when I started writing my own music and being very inspired to do my own thing and learn about the industry. So I was right. very involved in the industry before really actually being a part of it myself mm-hmm. as an artist.
Sure.
So met Ben when I was a junior mm-hmm. in high school, actually, mm-hmm. and then we didn't start dating until I was a sophomore in college. Mm-hmm. And when we met, it just, you know, when you fall in love, it puts a whole nother spin on life,
right.
and I was willing just to just drop it all, you know?
Right, sure.
I'll go anywhere, I didn't care, you mm-hmm. know? So when Ben got drafted and we had decided to get married, that was sort of the moment for me of deciding, okay, is my music going to continue to still come first? Mm-hmm. Or if I get married, I knew from being raised with my mother, who's mm-hmm. such a godly woman, like your family comes first and right. you know, your husband comes first. And so anyways, music sort of got put on the back burner, although Ben has been the biggest fighter for mm-hmm. my career.
That's
out
awesome.
Of anybody. Bought me my first keyboard, you know, bought me a computer to mm-hmm. be able to write on the road, which I continued to do. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of when the craziness began, is after school, releasing my first record, mm-hmm. having our first child, and then the ball just started rolling from there. Mm-hmm. So it's been a wild ride.
One of the things I was impressed when I was reading the book was just about, you know, Ben, you talk about specifically searching for a godly woman, but you're specificity, intentionality, as you two walked through the relationship together, trying to be very specific about honoring Christ as you walk through every moment of it and trying to make sure you're walking in His will. I was impressed. I thought that was something that you don't hear that often. So speaking of the book for a second, though, it's biographical, but speaks about the movement of God and the lessons that God has spoken specifically to you about. Why'd you want to write it in the first place? And you were telling me a little bit about how you were approached about writing it, but why? What was the motivation from your...
Well, I think when we finally decided that we did want to write the book, I think what was behind that is really God's story. What God is doing in the world is incredible, and we all have a chance. If God has done that in your life, He's done some things in your life to share that. And we were already sharing those stories with people mm-hmm. on a regular basis, be it in churches, be it in conversations, just sharing how God magnificently showed Himself to us to be divine in the way He brought us together and the way He's kept us together through some tough things. And, you know, wanting to share that with people in a more detailed way and just let them kind of in on that situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the stuff in the book, you know, you don't necessarily want to tell about.
Sure.
But you really, just opening up our hearts and our lives in that way, we felt like, you know, the Lord could use it. And mm-hmm. if the Lord can use it, I mean, that's been our whole, you know, since we've grown up, both of our parents were like, hey, God can use you in whatever sphere you allow Him to use you in. And you don't just have to be a pastor. I mean, right. We both know pastoral ministry is so important to us. I mean, mm-hmm. not only when we were kids, but now. I mean, even our pastor here in Nashville, and the church leadership is important to us. But we also understood from our dads that, you know, whatever area God calls you into can be your ministry. And so with music, with baseball, with athletics, how God continued to take us into these arenas, we wanted to use those to glorify Him and share His story and share the gospel, really. So the book has been really, for us, it's a way to share those stories, not only with our kids someday and with people that want to hear the interesting way that God did it, but also to bring it back to the gospel, to help them realize that, yeah, we may be up on a stage, athlete, musician, and people are watching what we do, but the reality is we're people that struggle, and we're people that fail and have difficulties in our life, and at the end of the day, it's the gospel that rescues us and gives us hope.
So that brings me to the next thing that I wanted to kind of dialogue about. You're a successful baseball player. You're not just successful. I mean, you're successful at the highest levels possible. You've got a recording career now. You've released multiple albums. Do you think your story can resonate with the average person who watches baseball on TV and their idea of music is just the CD that they pick up on the store? How do you think your story translates and resonates for them and with them?
Well, you know, that's one of the interesting things. When we do these events, oftentimes we'll do events where Ben will speak and I'll sing. And mm-hmm. One of our main goals is at the end of the time together is for the people in the audience to feel like we have a common ground, mm-hmm. to feel like, you know, because for so long we looked up to so many people, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just interesting that the gospel is what levels us and all of a sudden you're on the same ground, you're at sure. the same playing field. And obviously we know that there are so many people that would love to play pro ball and sure. all these things. And
right.
and there are dreams that sometimes didn't come true for various people, and we get that. But at the end of the day, we're all human beings with the same need and the same Savior. And I think the book does a good job. There are a few things in the book that we didn't want to put in. My dad referred to those as the black keys, and he said, Jules, you don't have a great song without black keys. You have to have all the keys. Mm-hmm. And so that the power lies within Christ's ability to restore and Christ's ability to take brokenness and make it something useful. Mm-hmm. You know, that's His doing. And that, at the end of the day, is what creates sort of a common ground for us and for the readers of the book and for fans in the stage, you know, in the audience. And so, I think it does a good job of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know when I was reading it, like you said, you both share some intimate and painful experiences that you both walked through. And I felt like, for me at least, those were the moments that I resonated with the most and also felt most moved by, you know, to, mm-hmm. to watch the redemptive activity of God.
Yeah.
Through both of your personal experiences, mm-hmm. and so I appreciate your vulnerability there. We're gonna go to a break here and come back in just a few minutes and begin to talk a little bit more about your story and how that applies to church leaders and how I think we can be helpful to them. I want to remind you, if you're watching, that we'd love to hear from you. We've already had some questions come in. If you're watching on the website, you can use the chat room to submit questions that way. Or if you're on social media, particularly on Twitter, if you'll use hashtag TheExchange, we'd love to hear questions from you that we can hopefully maybe have Ben and Juliana answer online live here in just a few minutes. And so go ahead and make sure you take advantage of that. Watch these commercials and we'll be right back. Thank you.
Saquam videre.
Esse quam videre. To be.
To be rather than to see.
Rather than to see.
I'm good at appearance.
I'm good at appearance.
Good at.
Good at putting on the show.
Putting on the show of I know what I'm doing.
But I'm not convinced.
But I'm not convinced.
I want to know the answers to questions.
Questions I don't want to say out loud.
To know what the Bible means in my life. Today.
Today.
The way I act with friends.
The decisions I make.
Where the next steps.
Where next steps will take me.
Will take me.
I'm ready.
I'm ready. Show me.
And welcome back to The Exchange. My name is Micah Fries, the Vice President of Lifeway Research. We're glad to have you here. We're working, spending some time today with Ben and Juliana Zobrist. We're thankful for them. Their new book, Double Play, is going to be coming out in stores April 1st. I want to hopefully give you an opportunity to get a taste of that today, and then if you get an opportunity, go ahead and pick it up, either through pre-purchase or when it comes out in April 1st, go ahead and make sure you get a copy. I also wanted to mention that we're giving away 5 copies today, and so in the chat room, we've got a moderator in the chat room who's going to randomly pick a few of you who are making comments or asking questions, so make sure you engage in the chat room if you'd like to win a free copy of the book. All right, so we're going to come back, and we're going to show a clip, just a clip of you stepping up to the plate, Ben, and then we're going to talk about it. So let's roll this clip real quick. And then let's have a little bit of a discussion about it.
Goes up to the pit, swung out. High drive to right. All the way back. Gone. Ben Zobrist hits a home run. And the Rays win this one at 11. It's a 3-1 final on Ben Zobrist's 16th home run of the year. With Upton breaking on the pitch. Zobrist launches one, and the Rays win it at 11 tonight on the home run by Ben Zobrist, 3-1 the final.
Okay, so first things first, I love seeing the Rangers lose. It warms my heart. Secondly, dude, you just 11th inning, walk-off home run. I dreamed about that as a kid. Describe what that's like.
Well, that was the first time I ever experienced it. I mean, okay. Little League, high school, college, never did it and was able to do it there. But the interesting thing about that is, it's crazy. I mean, yeah, you're going up there and you're thinking, you know, what you want to try and get a hit. You want to try and get on base. You do something good. And we had a runner on base at the time. So, you know, just trying to put a good swing on it. And I was actually feeling terrible at the plate at the time my swing just did not feel good. So I'm like, all right, well, Lord, I'm just going to go up there. And if I get a good pitch, swing hard and see what happens. And sometimes that's the best thing to do. And, let it fly and caught it right and, you know, was able to hit the walk-off. But earlier in the day, Juliana sang the national anthem for that game. So, you know, we always joke about that there's, like, something special when she does
the anthem. My word. Right. When I sing for the playoffs, I was like, babe, you have to win this game.
And we won.
Otherwise, I'll curse.
No. Game 3 of the ALDS.
The Lord seems to bless those moments. I don't know why. So we're trying
to get her. So the Rays calling, asking you to sing before every game, right?
Yeah,
that's what we're working on. Yeah, that's what we're working on. So
I would imagine it was difficult to sleep that night. I mean, adrenaline had to be pretty intense.
Oh yeah, exciting. And sometimes these games that go into extra innings, we don't get home till 2 a.m. Sometimes, right. So it can be a late night. But those are the fun ones to remember.
So one of the questions that has come in already is then how do you handle success? I mean, success is intense, and we know that we live in a culture of celebrity and materialism both, and those things are fed in professional sports. Mm-hmm. How do you foster a spirit of humility, Christ-like, you know, attitude, grace, when you've got that kind of success?
Well, I think the Lord does it for you. You know, he tends to, bring humility in times when we least expect it. You know, even times where I may be playing well on the field, maybe I'm not doing so well off the field. You know, maybe I'm struggling with my attitude or whatever it is. And you know, I think when you realize, when you look at the gospel and you realize why Christ had to die, you know, you have to take an honest look at yourself and go, yeah, I mean, I may be able to do whatever in the world's eyes, but the reality is, you know, Christ still had to die for me. You know, there's no one person on the earth, no matter how good a person is or how great things they do on the earth are. You know, we're all in a great need to be dependent for the Lord, for His strength, for His ability, for His sacrifice that He made for us on the cross. So, you know, when I play the game and I have success, it's the perspective of the gospel, of the cross, that reminds me that, hey, yeah, you, maybe everybody's lauding you and praising you and telling you how great you are at this time, but you know the reality. Mm-hmm. You know, right. you know right. the truth. And because of that, and also having people around you that know who you really are. Sure. You know, they know that my best friends, my family, I mean, they keep me accountable and help me recognize that, yeah, maybe you're doing great on the field, but let's talk about where your heart is, you know, because that's what it's all about. You know, the Lord wants our hearts. He doesn't just want our actions, you know, maybe that looks good on the outside, but he wants our heart to be grateful for what He's done and what He's doing.
That was my follow-up question. You actually have partly answered it, but it seems like when everybody around you is sort of lauding who you are, right, because of your athletic accomplishment, it would seem like to me maybe that it's more challenging to find people who will speak to you directly and honestly mm-hmm. and call you out when you're struggling with your attitude or, you know, your posture at home, that sort of thing. Do you find that to be difficult? To find people around you who'll be honest with you?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's hard regardless, sure. I think, to develop those intimate relationships, especially for women. I am one, so I sure. get it. Like, to be real with each other and to be vulnerable with another person is a difficult thing to do. It's difficult to stomach it. It's mm-hmm. difficult to have enough humility and love for another person to approach them out of love. So yeah, it's hard on both fronts, I think, but God has been so gracious and blessed us so much with, I think, the best friends in the world here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously our family.
Sure.
My family is really tight. There's 6 of us kids. Ben's family, there's 5 kids and his family as well, but our home church here, we go to Community Bible Church here in Nashville, and we were thinking about moving maybe. This was years ago, and at the end of the day, it was like, no, this is our family. Mm-hmm. Like, our church has become a life source for us, sure. especially during the season, mm-hmm. to have your pastor call you randomly or to come up down to Florida or friends from your church or, you know, just best friends in general. That is irreplaceable.
Sure.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, like, we have, you know, our church leadership and our church as a whole really pushes the idea of being transparent mm-hmm. and to be vulnerable. And, you know, as people of the Lord, people that understand who we are, I mean, that's what we're supposed to be doing, is sharing with people like, hey, look, there's nothing special here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I struggle like everybody else, but I can still be positive and realize that there's hope there because of what Christ has done and because of what He's doing. So anything good that comes through me, you know, it's Christ in me right. that's working itself out in the world. And I think that, you know, having those really close brothers, sisters in Christ, you know, those people that will call you out and will keep you accountable and challenge you. I think everybody needs that, including, you know, we talk about church leaders. I mean, our dads needed to have that, you mm-hmm. know, and that's hard to find. I can imagine it's much harder to find in a local church,
right.
but it's very hard for us to find on the road too. We're gone and we can kind of be on an island out there a little mm-hmm. bit, but we have to reach back out and be like, hey, you know, here we are, and other people are reaching towards us. So it's maybe a little bit longer arm of extension at times. You know, it may not be right in your sphere, everyday sphere, but those arms are still reaching for us, and we're reaching for them to stay unified in Christ.
So let's think for a minute then about the flip side of that. We talked about this during the break. The best baseball players in the world, when it comes to offense, fail 70% of the time, right? I mean, if you're hitting 300, I mean, you're and I think one of the things, there's probably a learned behavior there with baseball players. You learn how to handle that. But what's that like? I think that's one of the things probably church leaders resonate with, is the idea of failing on a public stage in front of mm-hmm. the world. How do you handle that? How do you process that?
Well, I think at times you have to have a short memory. Mm-hmm. You know, for us in baseball, you're going to every day be faced with things that you're going to either, you know, succeed at or fail at, and it's clear and everybody can see it, and it's right. in the papers and it's on TV and whatnot. And it's interesting how when you don't do so well, people kind of, you know, we get less text. Yeah. You know? People don't really text us quite as much when we struggle. You're on SportsCenter making a key error. It's like, people are like, we'll give him his space.
Yeah, that's right.
I can imagine it's the same thing for other people in similar situations. But, you know, for us, it's the people that, you know, are during those times are going, hey, you know, like, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, you doing all right? And also not dwelling on that struggle, you know, because we're going to fail so much. I mean, we even talk about music. They do the same things. We may not hear it in the audience so much, but being great at your profession, you know the little things that you did right or wrong out there. And so at the end of a game sometimes, you know, Jules will be like, hey, great game. And I'll be like, yeah, okay. And she'll be like, there was something little, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you know, not everybody maybe notices it, but you know that you're not doing as well as you maybe want to do out there. And it's during those times that, you know, I think it's important for us to be reminded to rest in the Lord and realize that, you can't be perfect. Yeah, we're striving to grow and we're striving to be the best that we can be out there on the ball field. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we can rest and know, Lord, I gave it everything I had. I wanted to honor you with it. And, you know, he makes up the difference, I think.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about something that I think a lot of our viewers understand, and both of you grew up as pastor's kids, and so I'm curious, do you think that, from your perspective, was that a good thing, is it a bad thing, and if so, why?
I think it was a great thing.
Okay.
I honestly commend my father, because I wouldn't have known, I mean, besides the fact that he preached every Sunday,
sure.
He could have been a mailman for all I knew. Mm-hmm. Like, he did not bring work home at all. Mm-hmm. He was very present as a dad. He was very present as a counselor to our family, leading our family. I never felt scrutinized because of being Pastor Gilmore's daughter, which is pretty brilliant.
I
think that's a very rare thing.
And your dad, from a ministry perspective, saw a lot of ministry success, right? Came in and led a church through a lot of growth.
Yeah, and absolutely.
So, and to be able to manage the home well.
Yeah, definitely speaks very highly of him, speaks highly of my mom, mm-hmm. you know, too. There's an element of protection there, I think, of not bringing confusion or whatever is happening at church, at work, into the family.
Mm-hmm.
I felt very free to just be who I was and to enjoy the church, so.
I think that's particularly interesting. I didn't expect you to say that, to enjoy the church, but I think that's interesting. Watching a lot of pastor's kids who struggle to enjoy the church, that's encouraging to hear you growing up as a pastor's child. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, well, my experience, my dad is from a smaller church. Mm-hmm. Our home church in Eureka, Illinois, where I grew up, is about probably 250 members now. And, you know, we were the key members of the youth group. You know, it was like, what are the pastor's kids doing? We were a little bit more scrutinized. And my parents were so involved in every ministry that, you know, when there was a ministry going on, we were pretty much involved in it. You know, there's not a lot of staff people at a small church like that. And so pastors that are pastors of a smaller church tend to have to do, you know, kind of wear more hats, you know. And so my dad had to do that growing up more. And I remember getting calls, you know, at home sometimes and being like, you know, having to quick call my dad because there was an emergency, things going on. So I do distinctly remember being a pastor's kid and being like, feeling that weight a little bit. And I know that pastors' families feel that weight sometimes of being a pastor's kid or being a pastor's, you know, family. And so, you know, I think the way that our family managed that was, you know, we manage it by just being faithful, and my dad was just a faithful servant, like constantly, and still is to this day. And my mom too, as a secretary of the church, and you know, they consistently are always talking about what's going on. They're always talking about, well, this is what's going on at the church. This is the ministries. These are the people that are coming to the church and are growing. And you know, that was just part of our life. So for me, it was like I grew up expecting to be in the ministry. I grew up expecting, like, that's just part of my life as a, you know, knowing this and understanding what it means to serve. It means sacrifice. So there was a lot of sacrifice that I saw in front of me. And I wanted, and really what that comes down to is it's the grace of God that sure. all my brothers and sisters all want to do the same thing. You know, right. they want to sacrifice. Now, they're not all going to be pastors.
Sure.
But they, you know, we understand that being involved in the church and being a servant involves, you know, a measure of sacrifice.
So one of the things I think is encouraging about your story, Ben, and yours, Juliana, is not only did you grow up as pastor's kids, a lot of kids grow up as pastor's kids and do the right thing, but there seems to be a sense of obligation. You guys both seem to genuinely love the gospel, both seem to genuinely love church. What do you think your parents did that instilled authentic love and affection for Christ in your life as a child that now is kind of borne fruit as you're now, as you're an adult?
That's a really great question. I know my mom, I remember her saying, it's not the method, it's the motive. Mm-hmm. And she said that a lot of times, I think to herself. Mm-hmm. In terms of parenting, because sure, there were right. six of us. sure. Not the method, it's the motive, you know? So I think they loved the Lord, sure. you know? My sisters before me, my sister 6 years ahead of me, loved him. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything other than to love him, mm-hmm. you know? There wasn't really another option.
Sure.
and
sure.
It wasn't until later and in high school and in college when I really started to wrestle with a lot of dangerous questions, if you will, those mm-hmm. scary questions that you don't really, as a pastor's daughter, have the guts to bring up to your dad at mm-hmm. that time. You know, that was, I remember thinking questions in my head, but not feeling brave Saying enough them. To approach them.
Right, sure.
But definitely the grace of the Lord and my own father's humility to be able to come back to him, you know, sophomore year of college, mm-hmm. junior year of college, and be like, I don't get this. And mm-hmm. I've never understood
sure.
that. And what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know, and wrestling with the hard truths of the gospel, mm-hmm. That's where I really began to love it, mm-hmm. you know. And I think because of his humility, I was able to approach those questions.
So thinking then about how that's change the way you parent. I mean, you all have two children now, which has got to be a challenge. And one of the things that I was thinking through when I thought about your story and how that could speak to those who are watching, Juliana, you parent while he's on the road a lot of days in a row. And I was reading in the book, you have a policy, you don't go more than 6 days with
yeah.
being apart, right? Okay,
yeah.
Which I think is incredible. But still, that leaves you with 5 or 6 days at a clip where you're parenting by yourself. And I think a lot of church leaders' spouses can resonate with that, who find themselves busy spouse on the road or just carrying to pastoral details. How do you handle that? How do you manage that and still love him well, love the kids well, parent well, without just feeling like you're frustrated?
Yeah, still figuring that one out.
In progress.
yeah, no, in progress. Well, one thing that has really helped us in our marriage from the beginning was having a very clear communication about what are the things, just as Ben in his own personality, what are those things that are important to him?
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that he wants to see our kids grow in? And not everything is super spiritual.
Right,
you know,
sure.
not every, it might even just be simple things like only a movie once a week or
sure.
only one little show a day or, you know,
right.
little things like that that can affect your parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel very much a team mm-hmm. with Ben. We don't only just talk about the kids at all,
sure.
but there's very strong communication there. I know the things that he wants to see in our children, and we talk about the things that they're struggling with and ways that we can pray for them and see them grow. So I don't feel alone.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe part of that is my personality. It's not hard for me to be alone and just to toughen through something, you know?
Walk through it, sure.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, but I would say that when we're on the road, when I'm at a distance, you know, one of the things that we really try and be purposeful about is talking on the phone about, you know, details about what's going on. And
sure.
And really, yeah, there's things that I can't necessarily do when I'm apart with her, but when, you know, we communicate about the issues that are going on, good, bad, you know, she's a great communicator about things like that. And like she said, it's a team effort. You know, even though I'm away, I when I come home, you know, I back her up. Mm-hmm. She backs me up. Sure. You know, we know that our kids know that we're together on everything, you mm-hmm. know, and when it comes down to it, if I had to choose between my vocation or my family comes first.
Sure.
Bottom line, you know, there's no question about that. So if there ever is a question about that, then I back away a little bit. We have to back away a little mm-hmm. bit, both of us, from what we're doing and come together as a family and just take care of our kids and make sure that we're keeping first things first, because that's our first ministry, you right. know, is at the home. And, you know, together as, you know, our spouse is our first ministry, and then our kids, and then it follows from there, you know, where the Lord has called us.
Well, we're going to go to a break here in just a second. We're thankful to have Ben and Juliana Zobrist with us. Don't forget to be looking for their book, Double Play, coming out of stores April 1st. Remember, you can win a free copy today in the chat room. So make sure that you're jumping in the comment stream, letting us know your thoughts and maybe even your questions, and we'll make sure to go ahead and get a few copies out. I think 5 copies were given away today. We're going to go right now to a clip, though, of Juliana singing a song called Brave One, and then we'll go from there into the break and then come back and spend a little bit more time with them. So take a look and listen as Juliana performs.
Can we just get to it? I mean, is there really anything more important? I mean, of all the things we can kind of afford to fudge on or zone out in, kind of be there but not be there. Similar to security briefings on airplanes. Know it, heard it a million times, probably got it memorized, really wasn't paying attention, don't remember a thing. I mean, of all the things that are legitimately left to interpretation, like when I say something, and I ended with, just saying, then what I meant comes second to what you think I meant or what it means to you. Or storylines with misplaced heroes. You know, that awkward moment that you realize you've been identifying with the wrong character. You are not the hero. Me, you, us, we are not the stars of Scripture. Far from the knights in shining armor, no. We're the damsels in distress. Christ is the star. The book is about him. I mean, of all the things, of all the nuances we can miss, this, is there really anything more important? This, far more than basic instructions before leaving Earth. No, this is the one thing we know God gave directly to us. I'm pretty sure he said what he meant in it. Maybe it's time we step back, fashion a new set of glasses, take a second look at what we might have been staring at for quite some time now, and see what we ain't been seeing the whole time. I mean, of all the things we can afford to postmodernize, this, is there really anything more important? I don't know, just saying.
And welcome back. We're excited to be back here on The Exchange with Ben and Juliana Zobrist. Don't forget their book, Double Play, comes out April 1st. Want to make sure that you pick that up in the stores. Let's jump right back in. Ben, one of the questions we've had a number of different people ask is about your relationship with other Christian ballplayers. Assuming, I would imagine, that that's one of the things that encourages you and challenges mm-hmm. you on the road. How does that work? I mean, do you have a community of other ballplayers who love Christ that you relate to while you're on the road?
Yeah, there's actually at least a few guys just about on every team that that are solid Christian guys, and they you know, there's always like a chapel rep on every team, and that guy kind of tries to gather the other believers together on the team and guys that are interested to come to baseball chapel, which has been a really important ministry for us over the years. For me, you know, in the clubhouse, our chaplain Gio Urena down in Tampa Bay has been a huge encouragement to me over the years. We've become very close with he and his wife Susie and their family, and you know, this past year was an exceptional blessing for me because we had several guys. We on a regular chapel service, we probably had 10 guys or more, which is pretty big for a 25-man clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just a lot of guys that really are seeking to walk with the Lord and want to hear what God has to say to them. And specifically, there was about three guys by the end of the year. We would get together once every night game, like for 15, 20 minutes before or after batting practice. And we'd sit in the middle of the clubhouse a lot of times and just talk about, you know, whatever the Lord, you know, was going on in guys' lives and questions they had about ministry stuff or questions they had about their relationship with the Lord. And a lot of them are young believers, so they would ask questions, and whatever I knew, I would tell them. I'd pull out the scripture. We'd look through verses. We would, you know, bounce ideas off of each other and things that we understand and know that the Lord has taught us from our lives. And just it was just a sweet time of fellowship during the season, and that's super rare in a major league clubhouse. You know, when I first got to Tampa, there was only probably a couple guys that even went to chapel, and now there's several that go to chapel. And you know, I think it has, you know, a lot to do with probably the type of people that Tampa Bay tries to come to the team. You know, they just, they want people that are good character guys, and you know, the Lord has been gracious to bring some believers on the team, and it's really encouraged me over the years, for sure.
One of the things that I think is intriguing, it's another one of the questions that came in, is how you approach the platform you have, which is a pretty big platform, and communicating your faith. Clearly, there's some athletes who are pretty, not just outspoken, but very overt, you know, scoring a touchdown and trying to acknowledge the Lord and that sort of thing. How do you handle trying to be faithful to Christ, reflect Christ, honor Christ on the platform that you have, you know, in baseball?
Well, at first I didn't handle it very well because I thought, wow, my platform's huge now, so I've got to, you know, do all this stuff to make sure that I'm being a good witness. And I heaped a whole bunch of pressure on myself because I thought, well, now I've risen to this level, and the Lord has put me here, so now I've got to do all these opportunities that He has come in my way, and I couldn't do everything, and I failed at a lot of things. I was, you know, it kind of took me to spiritual depression for a little while, just feeling like, well, man, why has He even put me here? I can't do this stuff. And I've realized over the years that number one, I don't have to feel that pressure. That's not the Lord. And really, the platform that we like to think of that certain people have, yeah, others might see a little bit more of your faith than they may someone that isn't on the national stage. But, you know, our platform before the Lord is equal, like we talked about before. We have a common ground, but we also have a common platform that He's given us all one life, you know, one life to live and glorify Him. And whether that's ministering to 1,000 people, you know, 1,000,000 people or 2 people, you know, that's your ministry. And the Lord is pleased by the heart of it, not by the numbers involved in it, I think. So that has taken a lot of pressure off for me and allowed me to feel free to say no to certain things for the sake of my family and for the sake of sanity at times.
Sure.
It's really given, you know, given more joy to those things that we do get a chance to do.
You've both spoken a lot about your local church, and I'd love to hit that topic again here in just a second before we finish. But what do you find as dominant influences in your life that have helped as you succeed in music, as you succeed in athletics, to help shape you theologically, spiritually, in your walk with Christ? What are the most prominent things that are influencing and shaping you spiritually?
Absolutely, our home church here in Nashville. Our pastor's name is Byron Yon. And aside from relating to him and the way that he speaks. He was a poetry major as well. Oh, wow. And so I really relate to the way that he verbalizes things. You know, he thinks outside of the box and isn't afraid to kind of pull the rug out from underneath what I've thought for so many years about various subjects. And I appreciate thinking. I appreciate studying. One of my favorite authors is C.S. Lewis, just because he's willing to go places people aren't willing to go and willing to ask questions that are most often avoided. And those have definitely been heavy hands in my spiritual growth. Sure. Obviously been too, just us walking through life together, mm-hmm. wrestling through things together. And I always say about Ben, people are like, what's he like? I'm like, what you see is what you get. Like, he's so steady and still waters run deep. Like, that is my husband. And mm-hmm. and God has definitely given him a very specific purpose. It's like ingrained in his brain. I swear it's like tattooed on his lids that he just lives life through this lens of wanting to glorify the Lord and wanting to honor him and wanting to please him. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit more of a wildflower, so it is so awesome and definitely God ordained that he has been as my husband, so that, I don't want to cry on TV, so that I can stay grounded in the truth of the scriptures. And I mean, the living life becomes way more simple when you have a very clear focus, and he's got that. So,
Ben, yeah. What's helping form you then?
I would say, obviously my wife has been a big part of our understanding the Lord, you know, together since we've been married. But you know, the theology, I've always been a big theology fan. I love theology. I love to discuss and study the study of God and study him and try and understand and know more. I like reading, theological books. You know, like one of my favorite books that I read was Five English Reformers, which is about, you know, the martyrs back in the 1500s. And, guys that stood on specific theological concepts that were so important to them that they were willing to die for them, mm-hmm. you know. And I just think in our culture, it tends to be superficial. A lot of things are surface level and we don't really dig deep. So I like to dig deep, and that's been something that I've always wanted to do and started really in college, and it's continued to this day, you know, reading various books. But, the high view of God and, the high view of God, an understanding of the depravity of man at the same time, the grace of the gospel in Christ and, you know, digging into those, the more I get to understand that, the less I really know. You know, it's like it's sure. such this wide chasm of knowledge and understanding that the Lord continues to teach me how much I don't know and how awesome and magnificent he is. And the more we get to know him, the more joy we can experience, the more of him we can experience, you know. And, I've really enjoyed that. And the sovereignty of God is another thing that just, you know, boggles my mind. It just boggles my mind because we're making choices every day, but he's sovereign over those choices. And he has our hearts, so... it's just his grace that gives us that understanding that we do have.
Well, I'm really thankful that you all have spent some time with us today. I'm even more thankful that you've invested yourself in the book so that that can be communicated to others. I want to give you just one opportunity as we get ready to go to speak to church leaders who are watching. And if you could encourage them in any way, you've just got a blank slate for a few minutes. Whatever you'd like to say to be able to encourage them, just take the next couple of minutes and as we get ready to close, encourage church leaders in what they do. We'll start with you, Ben, and then we'll give you a chance to close us out, Juliana.
Well, I would say that, like we talked about a little bit before, it was so important for us to see our parents as real people and see that they struggled too. And so they were the same person that they were. Yeah, in front of the group, they were preaching the gospel and, you know, preaching it hard, but like realizing at the end of the day that they were making mistakes too, and that confession and being real to us, to our families, was so important. So I would encourage, you know, any church leaders out there, just be real and genuine with your families, especially, and with those people that you see on a regular basis. Not just up, obviously up in front, you know, you're preaching and you're in front of the church and you're a leader and people are looking up to you. But that's been something that's very important for us to see, just a genuine nature of the way that you go about things. And just realizing that we're all the same before the Lord. I think that's really important. Another thing I would just encourage is as you reach out and as your bodies reach out, your local church bodies reach out, just encouraging people to use the gifts in whatever way God has gifted them. You know, because the more we've seen out in the world, the more we realize how the Lord has gifted people differently. And we want to try and put people in a box, and this is how you got to do everything. We're all different servants of the Lord. And as long as we're serving the same Lord, you know, and we're walking with Him and we're staying humble in that, I think that, He can write a great story if we allow Him to use us in various ways, you know. And I think of Juliana and her creativity and how if I was making the rules, if I was making people, like, creativity would not have been high on the list, because I'm not a very creative person, you know. But the Lord made her that way, and how that complements me and really enhances anything that I experience in life is you know, how the Lord has put us together. So I would just say to encourage those various aspects in your church and those people that have a heart for the Lord to allow them to express that.
Julia?
Yeah, that's great. I would say specifically to the mothers, it can be kind of a daunting task to raise children when it seems like you're standing on stage and raising children.
Sure.
Not very fun.
Right.
I was very burdened for a long time trying to kind of appease all the various, you know, different ideas on parenting and what I should and shouldn't be doing, and the fact that our kids stay up until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning to watch their dad play a baseball game, you know, was definitely frowned upon at points. So I understand, like, you kind of feel like you're under that scrutiny as a mother. But a very freeing thing to me was just realizing that the Lord, at the end of the day, we want the Lord to say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And He didn't say famous. And He didn't say fruitful. He chose His word as faithful. And we've said that oftentimes throughout our marriage and through baseball. Just be faithful with today, you know, and especially with our children. Just be faithful with today. And so I would encourage the mothers specifically to be faithful with that moment, you know, to invest in their children, which was going to make a change for an eternity. And also to the dads, I know it can be very easy to feel like your work is kind of done at church after you've preached, but to stay very invested in your daughters and to, you know, one-on-one time is really, really special for young girls. And my dad did a great job of taking us out on a date every week. And I have so many memories of just he and I alone at a restaurant with a really nice dinner in front of me. That was such a special treat. You know, those moments were way more powerful to me as a daughter than even going to church and hearing him speak. Mm-hmm. You know, that one-on-one time and communication. So I would encourage them in that way too.
Thank you both for being with us today. We really appreciate the time that you've given us, and I hope that it's been an encouragement. I hope it's been a challenge for you. We're thankful for the opportunity to serve you every week. Church leaders, we appreciate you. You are the heroes, and so we're thankful for your faithfulness to King Jesus and pray that you'll continue to be faithful. Remember, we're here every week, 2 o'clock Central, 3 o'clock Eastern. Ed will be back with us soon, assuming that the Aussies send him back to us, which I would assume they probably will. We're thankful that you've been here this week. We'll look forward to seeing you next. Have a good week. Thanks again for being here.